Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim is also the author of The Weed Agency. We've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And, Jim, we actually go to the Middle East for our good martini today. Mark it down with the help of U.S. forces, with a lot of help from U.S. forces, in fact. Kurdish troops on the ground have made great strides in at least stopping the bleeding for the moment against the surging ISIS forces. It looks like over the weekend, one of the big achievements was regaining control of the dam at Mosul for the good guys in this fight. And it looks like ISIS is on their heels a bit. It still doesn't tell us what we're going to be looking at long term in the fight against these guys, since they have a lot of followers and they're pretty well funded. But as of right now, our actions are making a difference.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to overstate it, but, you know, when we talk about the bad news in the Middle East and our bad martinis, I feel like we ought to at least put a little spotlight on when things seem to be going well. One, for those of us who worry that it was going to be a very quick pinprick strike from the U.S. forces in order so that President Obama could check the box and get on with his vacation. Well, here we are several days into the operation, and we're still bombing them, which is a good sign. They claim they have control of the area around the dam. There are a couple of correspondents in the area who are not quite as certain of that outcome, but it looks like they're at least regaining some control of the dam. If you haven't seen the updates, this is a dam that apparently is built in probably the worst possible place to have a dam. It is poorly built and not terribly well maintained. There was this memo from Ryan Crocker, who was our ambassador to Iraq, and David Petraeus back in 2007 that said, the dam is a disaster waiting to happen. It's not very well maintained. It's not very well built. And if it bursts, apparently the entire city of Mosul will get flooded with like 40 feet of water, some unbelievable amount. And it'll flood all the way down to Baghdad, which is like 200 miles away. So for perspective, imagine blowing up a dam in Boston and flooding New York City. This is quite an area that would, you know, obviously it's Iraq being heavily desert. People congregate around the river, so you're potentially a really serious disaster around that dam. So if they get control of it, that'll be a good sign. And, you know, look, after day, if it seemed like ISIS was on the march, you know, it looks like finally that they've hit, you know, some serious opposition, and we are starting to see some serious pushback, and maybe this is turning the tide, or at least helping the Kurds get a better upper hand in this situation.
All right, on to the bad martini now. And Jim, this has almost got a comical value to it, but it also shows how just corrupt the political and judicial system can be if political figures want to use it to their ends. The news came down on Friday evening that Texas Governor Rick Perry has been indicted, and everyone's thinking, wow, what did he do? Well, it turns out the local DA there in Travis County, Texas, that's where Austin is, has indicted through a grand jury the governor of Texas for, Jim, get this, threatening to veto a bill, threatening to veto funding for the district attorney's office in Travis County. Perry said that he would not allow $7.5 million in funding to go forward unless the district attorney, who had embarrassed herself and the county by driving drunk about three times over the legal limit, in fact, if she stepped down, he said, you get the funding. If not, you don't. She didn't. So he followed through on his veto. What dastardly executive power is he attempting to use here, Jim?
Well, apparently he threatened to veto the budget that would cover this DA office. The claim is that this is some sort of abuse of power on the part of Rick Perry. Now, to almost everybody else, no, this is just an exercise of power. And the idea of strong-arming a prosecutor or something like that, asserting it's corruption when the person who has this, you know, 0.32 blood alcohol level, which, I mean, at that point, Greg, you don't have a blood alcohol level. You have an alcohol blood level. that somehow she's the victim in all this, even though she went to jail for, you know, 40-some days. I mean, what's astounding is that she was not, one, she didn't resign. She didn't feel she needed to resign, even though she was in jail. And she's still currently the Travis County District Attorney, which is kind of mind-boggling. And so, you know, the fact that this county's office is now, it looked like a pretty obvious retaliation against Governor Perry. And immediately, the Texas Democratic Party jumps out and demands the governor resign.
Right.
And, you know, interesting, they didn't demand that this DA with the DUI resign. There are folks on the left, David Axelrod, Alan Dershowitz, various other liberal commentators looking at this and saying, you know, this does not look like a solid case. This is a misuse of power and a coercion of one's opponents. Among the interpretation is that the veto itself is somehow illegal, right? I mean, which is, you know, which is like right there in the Constitution. And then the next argument is that threatening to veto is illegal. You almost want to say, what, were they drunk when they came up with this? knowing recent history is a possibility. Now, the question is whether this is meant to create the headline, Rick Perry indicted, and that, you know, if Rick Perry decides to run for president someday or something else, that he's got this stuck to him, even if the case gets thrown out. And as I wrote in today's Morning Jolt, these cases tend to go on for a really long time. We all remember, by the way, same Travis County DA office, different prosecutor, but back then in 2005, they indicted Tom DeLay, and it was this huge scandal. He didn't go to trial until 4 years later. So he had this hanging over his head, and ultimately he stepped down as majority leader and all this stuff. 5 years later, he gets the verdict, which he was found guilty on two counts. He appeals to it, and then in 2013, just last year, the convictions were overturned. So that's like 8 years later, and this, you know, this fight is still being fought in the courts. And so even if Rick Perry did nothing wrong and this thing seems like a joke, he could literally be facing like 8 years of legal fights stemming from this because he's got a bullseye on his back and this prosecutor wants to, you know, cause headaches for him and you know, hopefully impede his presidential ambitions, at least from their perspective.
Certainly some legal and potentially financial frustrations for Perry here. But on the surface, Jim, if you look at the DeLay case with the fundraising, people's eyes kind of glaze over. I don't know what the fundraising rules are in this state. But when you talk about, well, the governor threatened to veto something, I think most people who have a fairly functional knowledge of government can see on the surface that that one is pretty bogus. Don't you think that's
a fairly functional knowledge of government, Greg? That's, you know, rarer and rarer. Like, on the one hand, you're right. And that the fact that, you know, I guess we should give a smidgen of credit to David Axelrod and folks like that who are, you know, looking at this, and clearly there are quite a few commentators who say we have no admiration for Rick Perry, but that there just doesn't seem to be a case here. And you know, the problem is with this DA who does something terrible, gets, you know, fights with the cops in there and makes an embarrassment of herself and, you know, gets, you know, sentenced to the maximum you can get for drunk driving. By the way, DUI is a Class A misdemeanor in Texas, not a felony, kind of interesting. So she didn't have to give up her law license. Doesn't resign, doesn't leave her office. Like, that's the problem there. The idea that, you know, Rick Perry is the malevolent force in Texas law and politics is kind of, you know, laughable. But another example of it, just like the John Doe investigation of Wisconsin, all it takes is one liberal DA, and they can make a Republican governor's life miserable. And at this point, there doesn't seem to be much of a recourse for the governor.
You know, the DA is not getting the reaction they want when the guy who made his fame helping Obama get elected to the Senate by coming through opponents' divorce records says, you know, this is pretty low, people.
Too dirty for David Axelrod. That's right. When he's scoffing at your ethics and your legal arguments, yeah. So.
All right. Speaking of questionable public figures, let's go to the crazy martini. And of course, Montana Democrats are in a tough situation. They handpicked their lieutenant governor to try and keep the Senate seat that Max Bock has held for many years. Plagiarism scandal took him out. Nobody else who with much of a reputation was interested in running at this point. The Montana Democrats this weekend nominated Amanda Curtis. She's a state rep. And it doesn't look like she's going to put up much of a fight, but we'll see. Here is an ad.
Well, she'll put up a fight.
here's an ad from the Montana Republican Party showing excerpts of Amanda Curtis musing on a number of key issues. Here are some clips.
We had three gun bills on the House floor today. Really interesting day to watch the debate on that. And you know what? I walked all the way home tonight from Carroll College in the dark and through parking lots and everything. And I didn't have a gun with me. I'm glad I made it. He was crying for his nieces and nephews because they're going to inherit this debt. It's bull. And that's the nice word for it. The sponsor of the bill said today that the most basic form of government in Montana is the family. Really? Frankenstein ended up with an abnormal brain, and I think that's what you'd have to vote against Medicaid expansion.
She also talked about wanting to walk across the aisle on some other debate and punch the other side in the face, Jim. So clearly, if you're running for the world's greatest deliberative body or whatever the Senate likes to call itself, this is exactly the type of person you hope gets there.
Oh, you know, Greg, you skipped over my favorite, which she declares she's an anarchist at heart. Now, I don't understand how you can be a big government, let's increase spending, let's increase government control, Democrat, while also insisting that you're an anarchist, I guess, deep within that heart. Somebody on Twitter just put it very well. It's not just that her positions, you know, of be scoffing that women might need to arm themselves and have a Second Amendment right to do so, scoffing at the debt and the notion that it's a problem, rolling her eyes at the expressions of Christian belief in the public square. As somebody put it, you know, it's not only her positions that are off-putting, it's that whole snarky arrogance vibe that really puts the cherry on top. So let's congratulate Senator Steve Daines, Republican from Montana, declare the campaign spot, three more lunch decision desk, is now projecting a winner in Montana's Senate race. Yes, technically they don't vote until November, but let's face it, this is, or as some people said, this is a very dramatic way for Montana Democrats to concede the race. I myself, now here's the thing, what we have to do, dear listeners of Three Martini Lunch, is start agitating for Hillary and Obama to go out to Montana to campaign for her. Because if they refuse, well, aren't they just betraying the progressive, you know, base of their party? Aren't there lots of people who would say, hey, you know, if you're really, you know, if you're supposed to walk the walk, Hillary Clinton, then, you know, why aren't you out there helping her? And we can, you know, maybe create an even more embarrassing moment, because at some point they'll ask this charming young woman her thoughts on that, and I'm sure those would be fascinating, illuminating, and all that stuff. So the merchandising for this campaign is going to be terrific with all the tinfoil hats and stuff. So Amanda Curtis, my new favorite candidate of the 2014 cycle.
Outstanding. I don't know what the victory formation looks like in the middle of the third quarter, but
it's when he starts writing earmarks already. You know?
Good times. Well, this looks to be turning out better than the last Senate race in Montana that we thought we had a good chance of winning.
So. There we go.
So. Jim, good start to the week. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to join us again on Tuesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.